You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
A New Year's Eve celebration episode here on Locked On Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow our show on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On PHX Suns. You can follow me on Twitter at Brendan Kleen 14. And today I wanted to have a little fun. We don't have a Suns game to talk about on Wednesday night here, and we are heading into another holiday weekend where people will be watching the Suns, potentially seeing one another, hanging out, thinking about 2021. And so what I wanted to do is think about Suns fandom, Suns experience heading into the new year. So let's get right to that. I am joined today on this episode by Greg Esposito, Espo, formerly of the Suns and now of the Suns Solar Panel podcast and a whole bunch of places across the internet, and is somebody who ever since I started caring about the Suns, has been a voice for Suns fans. So he was perfect, and I had a great, pretty long conversation with Espo. And then John Voida of the Suns Jam Session podcast over on Bright Side of the Sun, which is a great show as well, and is plugged in with the fans in a different way than my show is. So it's always cool to get a different perspective, right? And so I try not to be too much of a fan, or one at all at this point in time when it comes to the Suns, and not much of one when it comes to other teams, but I wanted to get their perspective, and I opened up a little bit about what the Suns have meant to me growing up, and we get into, you know, is Phoenix a Suns town? Is this city ready and excited the way that so many of the most plugged-in folks are, and what is it going to look like as we watch this team consume it and fans are cheering for this group through a very weird and socially distant season? So all of that coming up. It's two great conversations. Please do not miss out on that. If you are a first-time listener to the show, welcome, welcome, welcome to Locked On Suns. Let me know how you like this episode at Locked On PHX Suns, and go ahead and shoot us a follow, a subscribe over at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever platform you are on. If you are a returning listener, hello. Please go ahead and leave that 5-star review. It helps more Suns fans just like yourself find us and join us on this wild ride this season. Before we get into my conversation with Espo, I wanted to take a little bit of time to take stock of what 2020 meant for me and for our show, this show. And, you know, I've been thinking about it a little bit, and it's a very weird, you know, thing to look back on right now for me, because last year I graduated college in the spring of 2019 and didn't have a job set up immediately. So I decided to basically dive into freelancing, covering this league and this team full time, or basketball really more broadly. And it's been an awesome opportunity. I got to go to last year, this is not 2020, but I got to go to the NBA Draft Combine and Summer League, and had my sights set on doing the same come 2020. So that obviously did not happen. We were cut off right before the combine would have happened. Obviously no summer league. Obviously no, you know, I cover the WNBA, so I go to LA, or I go to Vegas, and I was going to go to LA to cover games in those towns where there are WNBA teams. A lot of stuff changed, but at the same time, getting to watch these games and cover the bubble games right along with so many of you. I was not around in podcast form at that time, but look, I don't even like social media, and I was begging Dave King, the managing editor at Bright Side of the Sun. Now, I didn't have to beg. He let me, of course, but I was just wanting to have a way, an outlet to join you guys and have some fun and just dive into basketball again. So I was on the Bright Side of the Sun Twitter account, live tweeting games. I've been live tweeting games over on the Locked On Suns Twitter account. Those bubble games were just the perfect thing that I needed at that point in time to just have some fun again, watching those games, not just the Suns, but every single one of them. The playoffs were great. Even if it was a Lakers championship, which we were all probably rolling our eyes at a little bit, it was a ton of fun to watch. And so I'm thankful that I had that opportunity to still be able to cover and talk about and enjoy all of that with you guys and with just the basketball internet in general. Everybody that makes up that group of people online is something I'm very thankful for. And on top of that, I got to do awesome stuff. Like, you know, even with the pandemic and everything being so different, and we had this huge break and then very little break after the bubble and all the weirdness, like, I got to interview Jack McCallum on this show talking about the 7 Seconds or Less book. I got to do podcast episodes with some of my favorite writers since I've taken back the show over, and, you know, got to talk to guys like Devin Booker and Chris Paul and Monty Williams, and like see what this team is becoming that I've grown up seeing and watching and spent a lot of time covering what's next for it. So the bubble, we get into this with Espo later on in the show, but the bubble is, I don't think any of us are going to forget that. Not only just the NBA being back in the way that it was and everything that went into that, but the Suns especially doing what they did and exceeding expectations, setting the groundwork for this incredible run that they're now on, acquiring Chris Paul, signing Jay Crowder, going 3-1 this first week, and everything that I expect will come later. All of that is definitely something to be thankful for. I appreciate each and every one of you that have listened to this show, that have read my work, that have done any of that sort of stuff. And here's to a 2021 where maybe we can hang out and watch some basketball together again. And a lot of fun Suns moments, I'm sure, in the not too distant future. And yeah, so who knows what comes next? You know, try not to think about what comes next. This show is awesome and fulfilling, and I have a lot of fun doing it, and I appreciate that I've gotten so much support since I came back, and people listening and interacting and asking mailbag questions and telling me what you think about the team and all of that, telling your friends about the show, whatever you have done, all of that stuff is really meaningful. So thank you. And before, one last thing before I keep saying, before I get to my conversation with Espo, but I promise it is coming. The last thing I wanted to let you guys know is that we have a special announcement for the show coming up in 2021, starting next Monday, January 4th, which will be the next show you hear from me. We will be off on Friday, so Monday will be the next one, and it will be with Brandon Duenas, Brandon of AZ Sports Zone, Zona Sports on Twitter, one of the busiest men covering the Suns, does his own stuff on Patreon. He just launched a website. He's all over draft stuff, NBA stuff, Sun stuff, and he's a writer at Bright Side of the Sun right along with me. So I wanted to find somebody who could come on with me every week. It's a model on the Locked On Network that I think works really well. Having us a go-to guest, somebody that the audience gets to know and all that. So I know you guys like Brandon already. We've had him on pretty much every week already since I took the show back, but it'll be consistent. It'll be every Monday. It'll be the two of us going 30 or 40 minutes just in place of my droning on. It'll be both of us talking Suns, having some fun. Brandon's awesome at breaking stuff down on the court, has, you know, one of the more passionate kind of perspectives on things as well, and is well-versed in the NBA, well-versed in basketball. When draft time comes around, there's nobody better. So yeah, it'll be a new thing starting in January and in the new year to just make the show better. I hope it does that for you guys, and I hope to keep giving you great stuff. All right, without further ado, my conversation with Greg Esposito. But first, a quick note from our sponsor, which is betonline.ag. Who is ready for some football? The college football playoff is about 24 hours from kicking off whenever you hear this. NFL matchups are wrapping up this weekend, and the playoff picture is almost set. There's only one place that has you covered for all of that, and only one place we trust here on the Locked On Podcast Network, and that is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. If you are maybe having a perspective on Trevor Bauer, This is a guy who I got to interview. We're talking about that before, all the cool interviews I got to do. I got to interview Trevor Bauer, who set up a wiffle ball game here in spring training. He's a free agent. Where is he going? If you think you know, don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. Greg, I wanted to check in with you. Just first of all, because you haven't been on the show in a little while, how are you feeling about the team after four games? We're talking after they beat the Pelicans on national TV. They're 3-1. How are you feeling having watched this team finally on the court? And is anything different than you expected?
Well, first off, after that introduction, I'm feeling old because you basically made it sound like I've been talking Suns on the internet since the internet was invented. But other than that, I'm feeling great about this team.
The internet's young. You have nothing to worry about.
That's true. But when, you know, I'm feeling great about this team. When you look at it, you consider sitting at 3-1 as we record this, up until Tuesday night, they had not played a complete game and they still had won two of their first three games and their only loss was by 3 points. So in the past, if they weren't clicking, it was a 20-30 point loss. And now they weren't clicking, they were still winning games. And when it all came together against the Pelicans, I mean, you saw a thing of beauty, and that was without CP3 or Devin Booker playing particularly well, at least offensively, in terms of scoring against the Pelicans. So I think this is about as good as you could have expected four games into it. Yeah, it'd be nice to be 4-0, but everything you looked at and everything that's come to fruition, I don't know that there's much more we could ask for as people that watch this team, to do these podcasts, or as fans in general. I don't know that there is more that you could want out of it.
It's funny you said they hadn't played a complete game up to Tuesday. You could make the case they didn't even have to play one on Tuesday because they basically only had to play the first 2.5 quarters of that game. But yeah, it's been very positive. I think the way you put it is right, where, you know, even last season they got the wheels kind of came off a couple of times because they didn't have bodies or things just were not clicking. So even though the chemistry is very clearly still developing, they are clicking in spite of that better than I mean you would have expected for this team. But frankly, you look at some of the other rosters around the NBA that had some new additions, and the Suns are a little better than I think some of those in terms of the gelling process. So optimism abounds, I think, for sure. And on that note, I wanted to ask, when the last time that you went into a Sun season, or were a week into a Sun season, I guess more appropriately now, thinking that they had a chance to be as good as you think they can be in 2021?
Maybe 2010. I mean, everybody will default to that. I think it was 14-15 where they won 48 games, but even going into that, and even after the first week, everybody was hesitant because that team was built to fail and somehow overcame that because of chemistry. 2010 or 2009-10, when they made the Western Conference final run, even that team wasn't expected to accomplish what it did. So we're probably talking going even further back into the heart of that 7 seconds or less run, where people were really this excited after a week and had high expectations going in. Now, I'm not saying that this team is necessarily on the cusp of something we've never seen in basketball or pushing the elite in the Western Conference necessarily, but if you were like me and you went in with expectations of, you know, maybe a 3 or 4 seed being kind of the top of where you wind up, and a 6 or 7 the low bar, you're right in that, and you very well could push the Clippers of the world, the Nuggets of the world, in that upper echelon of the West if things hold the way they have, because they haven't impressed overly yet so far either. Now, we're early. This is a very weird season, as we all know, because of shortened training camps and everything that was went on in this offseason, and some teams having just wrapped up a few months ago who made long playoff runs. So it's tough to judge based on a first week, but this team feels like something special could happen here. And that Pelicans game feels like it may just be the start of something, not necessarily some culmination of, oh, well, look, that's what this team can be. It feels like, no, that was just part of what this team can be, because we didn't even see their two best players have great offensive games.
Agreed. I said something similar on the show yesterday that listeners will probably recognize in what you just said, is that it feels like we might look back on this game as sort of when things started to lock into place, especially on the offensive end, where they've been surprisingly good defensively through a few games, but then to see the offense do what it did, generating so many good shots, so many threes that went in, and getting the ball moving the way that they did, all that stuff is, of course, what we know the kind of goal of this offense is. So to see it happen, combine it with that defense, I do think we might look back on that Pelicans game, and obviously being on national TV and with Zion on the other side of the court doesn't hurt the perception either. But there's something I've been thinking of, which is something that actually Gina Mizell wrote when she was hired by The Athletic. And it was, you know, about her, you know, they all used to do those Why I Joined the Athletic stories. And hers was about how Phoenix, you know, she grew up here and then was coming back to start covering her hometown team. And that her argument was that Phoenix at its core is a basketball town. And I had never really seen somebody make an argument like that. Of course, her coming to cover the team, not to be too cynical, of course, she's going to make that argument in some ways because she wants people to care about her coverage. But it did get me thinking because, of course, we know it's the original team here, and we know that it is had the most different patches of excellence over the years compared to any other team. Most of the teams we have here aren't even old enough to have had that. So do you think that that is true of this city? And what do you think it will feel like if they get into legit playoff position and win the way that they seem to be capable of winning?
It's 1,000% correct. And you can go back and look at any period of success with the Suns. And yes, the Cardinals having success is fun. The NFL is...
It hasn't been fun this year, let me tell you.
Oh, that's true.
It's been miserable this season.
but if you remember in, you know, with the Super Bowl run, I don't know if you were around in town for that 98 playoff run. You know, it's special when the Cardinals are good, but there is nothing like this town when there is a good or even a great Phoenix Suns team. It is just different. There's an energy around here when there is good basketball, and I think that's what's made the last decade so difficult, is because this is the first love of many people in this town when it comes to sports. And in some cases, it's the only love, because for an older generation that grew up here, there weren't any other teams. It was the Suns and ASU. I think the toughest thing is there's now going to be a generation of fans that it may not necessarily be the case. That this 10-year drought has also caused a gap in people who look at the Suns as their most beloved team in the Valley. But there will never be anything like a Suns playoff run. The Cardinals Super Bowl run was great, but did they have 250,000 people for a parade when they finished second? No. The Suns, we're a weird town. The Suns celebrate Suns fans celebrate second place like nobody's business. They did it in 76 for that team, the Cinderella Suns. They did it in 93 when the Suns finished second to the Bulls, which to me means when this team actually wins a title, the celebration is going to be next level. Because they can celebrate second amazingly. First is going to be crazy. I mean, even the Diamondbacks championship run wasn't what it's like with the Suns, because they were so young. I mean, they were 3 years, four seasons into that franchise.
People hadn't poured themselves into that team quite the same way.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it and you know, it would be kind of ironic if this were the year that they did it. And I'm not saying they will, but it would be the one time we wouldn't really be able to celebrate the way we'd want to, and there would likely be no fans having seen any of it. And something about that makes me wonder, will this be the weird kind of year that something magical happens? But yeah, there's nothing like a Sun success in this town. And I don't say that as just because I'm somebody that worked for the team, but for me, it is a deep passion. It is my first love. I mean, I am a fan of all Arizona sports teams, but there's nothing like remembering being an 8-year-old watching those Barkley teams and falling in love with basketball and getting deeply passionate for this team. There's nothing like it, and never will be.
Yeah, I think listeners to this show and people who follow my coverage the past few years of diving into for the first time covering this team will recognize that I hope I do a good job of distancing myself from the fandom as much as I can. And, you know, it's obviously no secret I grew up here, and I'm not going to pretend like being a kid when Steve Nash was doing what he did was not something I was, you know, attached to. I was, and it was awesome. And I get asked why I like basketball so much, because people don't necessarily in my family care about. I mean, nobody really is a Suns fan in my family. I have friends that are Suns fans, and I have people in my life who care about basketball. But I think that's what I come back to, is like, it was just kind of it just was layered over and seeped into everything kind of about the Valley and about being a sports fan when I was growing up. And it feels like that really was what inspired the passion I have for the game. So I think you're right. There is just something about it. And I think there's also something about the NBA where it's just on all the time. It's kind of like baseball in places where baseball is big too, you know, or I guess the NHL, although that sport is not quite as big here, is just, When it's part of your life every night of the year for 6 months, it just has a different way of getting to you, I think, where you're turning, you know, you spend four nights a week with Steve Nash, and it just feels different than the event of turning on, you know, Kurt Warner and the Cardinals or whatever it is for your team. So I think that's all very fair. My last question gets into what you were gesturing toward just a moment ago, which was I sort of marveled and laughed at a little bit the fact that as a Valley sports fan that we saw two LA teams win, like, did it, if the tree falls in a forest and no one hears it, did they happen titles this year in the Dodgers and the Lakers? And that's fun to joke around about, but it doesn't necessarily look like 2021 is going to look much different here. So I ask you, how does the pandemic change things? And also just to give a nod to the fact that I know it's not pretty, and I know the Suns are not the only business that suffered this fate, but to experience this team with the understanding that many of the employees who make it what it is are no longer around or are in a limbo without having certainty about their job, and that does change things. Maybe not for the average fan, and if that's not true for you, then don't let it affect you, because whatever, but you know, go into these games and stuff, there's just not the familiar faces that I'm used to. So how does that all color how you'll consume this season, Espo?
Well, first off, for LA teams, it wasn't all that different because, you know, they leave early in the fourth or in the seventh inning in baseball. So they're used to performing to nearly empty crowds by the end of a game. So those championships were pretty normal for LA people.
I love it.
But in terms of this season, look, it's not lost on me hearing about the unfortunate situation with a lot of people over in the organization. And, I think I've shared this before, but I'll bring it up here too. You know, I entered the league when I joined the Suns digital staff in the middle of the 2011 lockout. And, you know, I was in my early 20s and didn't really think much of it, but I started in September, and by the time we got to Thanksgiving, there were rumblings that if this doesn't get solved in the next week, a lot of us are going to be furloughed and there's going to be cuts. And I just remember the fear of that, because as much as we want to act like you get paid a lot in sports, or you wish you did, that's just not the case. So when you hear, hey, my livelihood, which isn't all that robust to begin with, maybe cut, just hearing it might happen was nerve-wracking. So I can't imagine what those that were either laid off or furloughed during this are going through. And I feel for them. I mean, I genuinely do. I can't imagine. And I've reached out to several of them that I know that either I worked with or have gotten to know since I left there, and you know, offered my help, my condolences, you know, whatever I could. With that said, it's tough. You know, I feel for that, but I also, there's two parts of it. You know, I look at it and I go, okay, well, I'm still going to watch the games because obviously it's a part of what I do, and it does take some of the enjoyment out, but we're also in the middle of a global pandemic, and we all need a distraction as well. And I know it's somewhat selfish when you say that after the first part, but it's true. And there's some comfort in watching this and finding that entertainment. I think it was Paula Bovin the other day tweeted, you know, thanks to the Suns for taking my mind off of all of this for 2 hours. And that's the reality of it. That's what it was in the bubble. That's what it is right now, is it's a distraction. I mean, many of us, you know, are still living most of our lives, you know, around our house. We're either working from home or not leaving because of other factors. And it's just a distraction. It's escapism. And it is a weird duality to it. But, I've had to find a way to kind of separate the two and treat both in different ways. And I think a lot of fans have to, it's awful what's happened. It's not, it's terrible. And none of us would want that to happen. And in a sport that, you know, there's a lot of money, it's tough. But I've also, you know, somewhat selfishly had to look at it as an escape, because I need that as well. You know, and I think we all can kind of relate to that. But from a purely basketball standpoint, it is fantastic that we finally get to see a winning team, what we hope is a winning team. And it comes at a time where many of us need this distraction more than ever.
Certainly. And it's, in its own way, I think we'll all remember the bubble and, hopefully more memories forged watching this team, more than we might have otherwise, to be completely honest. So, maybe that'll be, I don't even think it's maybe, I at least for me personally, covering those games and being on Twitter those nights, and actually more like afternoons with the weird schedule, but it'll be there in my memory, I think, forever, because of the uniqueness and the sort of visceral need for that, at least among sports fans. So that's a great place to leave it. And on that note, I did want to wish you congrats on the move of the solar panel. We get to see your bright face during ad breaks on Fox Sports Arizona now, and more content from you, a bigger platform. So congrats on that. And thanks for coming on, as always.
Well, thanks. I apologize for the commercials in advance. I'm sure they will become quite annoying for everyone, myself included, to hear my shrill voice on numerous occasions throughout a game. But I do appreciate that. And to your point about the bubble, I hope that some of those memories, in particular that Booker shot, is what makes some younger generations of fans become big Suns fans as well, because it's a unique opportunity with a lot of kids and younger people watching due to some additional downtime that maybe they find a love in a team that many of us have through different periods.
Certainly a hopeful note to end on, definitely. So let's pivot there to my interview with John Voida. We will be talking about a lot of these same things, getting John's perspective on Suns fandom heading into 2020 or 2021. Wow. I am behind already. Let's go to my conversation with John. All right, back here with John Voida, the host of the Suns Jam Session podcast and a contributor over alongside myself and Espo, I guess, a little bit as a podcast host over at Bright Side of the Sun. Talking about Suns fandom heading into 2021. We are upon the new year here, and it's a nice opportunity to look back, to look forward. So I'll just give you an open-ended one to start off with, John. How are you feeling? How are you kind of just existing in this space of optimism and hope right now as a Suns fan? It must be pretty different, right?
It's very weird. And you know, first and foremost, thank you, Brendan, for having me on the Locked On Suns podcast with you. It's really strange. As the whole world seems to be crumbling around us, the Phoenix Suns are rising from the ashes. And ever since the pandemic started, going into the bubble and now entering the 2020-2021 season, we are faced with nothing but optimism while the rest of the world seems to have a pessimistic point of view. So I feel like we're really, as Suns fans, going against the grain of just society in general right now. And it's just an odd feeling.
It is an odd feeling. And it's like the one team that I do allow myself to be a fan of, I guess the Diamondbacks, but they haven't given us much to care about lately. So mostly the Cardinals have, I think their season has been strangely exactly the type of 2020 season that you don't want, in terms of, I just want to like turn on a Cardinals game and enjoy myself for 3 hours every Sunday. And they've done the exact opposite of that. Yes. So from a Suns perspective, it has been mostly good stuff. I mean, even like when we really look like at 2020 completely, they were pretty good in February and March too, up until the stoppage. So it's been a lot of good. So I asked Espo this question, and I'll ask it to you as well. Like, when was the last time you remember being as, actually, hold on. I know Espo's story of being a Suns fan, but I don't necessarily know yours. So what are your fondest Suns memories? How long have you been a fan? I don't even know if you grew up here.
Yes. Well, I was born in Phoenix, but I grew up in Los Angeles, and I didn't move back to Phoenix until about 1994. But that being said, Phoenix was the hometown where my parents are both from, fifth generation Arizonans on my dad's side. So okay, our Phoenix roots definitely go. It's in the blood to bleed purple and orange. And it's funny, actually, this past Christmas, I was talking to my dad about the 1976 NBA Finals and how he navigated his thoughts during that time frame and had the disappointment that he felt, but also at the same time, the excitement of that team, knowing that they were a fresh face in the Valley, and they gave us some national notoriety. But even growing up in Los Angeles, although my affinity for baseball tends to go against most local teams, you know, I'm a Dodgers fan, so okay, I had a good year there, but everyone else hates me for it, and I'm okay with that. But the Suns are a team that I grew up loving. I grew up loving them and the Chicago Bulls. The Showtime Lakers are a team that my dad hated. He said, "You watch this guy, Michael Jordan." But my fondest and first memories of the Suns were those Kevin Johnson and Tom Chambers years. I was 6 years old. I think I'm a year older than Espo. So we're okay, probably aligned with the same timeline when it comes to becoming Suns fans. And I mean, I just remember those teams, and then coming back here every Thanksgiving and Christmas to visit my grandparents, going to the Madhouse on McDowell and seeing those beautiful Wild West purple jerseys. It's just unbelievably fond memories. And then obviously going into the Barkley era and the post Barkley era, by the time I moved out here in 95, I mean, I was full fledged Phoenix Suns, and it was heartbreaking. I mean, that's the story of the Suns. It's the, sure, the franchise of almost, we've almost been at the pinnacle a couple times, and you know, it's just, you know, ride or die with the Phoenix Suns, but man, they make you earn it.
Yeah. Espo mentioned how, you know, here in the Valley, we throw a party for second, like nobody's business. So,
so true.
Hopefully, I guess, for all of us who are really just searching for any championship, I think at this point we'll be glad to celebrate first whenever it comes. But back to that question, when was the last time you remember being as, we're 1 week in now, as excited and optimistic 1 week in as I'm sure you are now?
It's got to be all the way back to the 06-07 season. I mean, the Suns, I mean, think about this. If you are 31 years old right now, you've probably never had a beer at a bar during a Suns game. And this year, if they do make the playoffs, during the playoffs, that is. And if this year, if bars by some magic stance, you know, we get to the NBA playoffs and you have an opportunity to go, it's a great experience. It's a communal experience. And those were some of the great memories of the 7 seconds or less Suns, were going to the bar and just being with a bunch of, you know, 55 of your closest friends that you have no idea who they are, and cheering on those Suns teams. And I think that the 04-05 team, there was so much excitement. 05-06, there was disappointment going into that, knowing that Amari was hurt. So you didn't have, it was more a wonderment that kind of came much akin to the 2010 team. But the last time I had expectations like this, it's got to be 06-07. I mean, we were primed, we were ready. That was a team where it was like, you know, we are the best team in the NBA. Who's going to stop us? And then eventually the Spurs stopped us.
Yeah, we've never really, at least as far as I can remember, and I'm not that old, so I, granted, do not have as much of a background with, like, you know, the 70s teams or anything like that, but I don't remember. It's a unique sort of situation because of the addition of Chris Paul, because it was different with Nash, right? Because we know he broke out sort of as he became the leader of the Phoenix Suns. He wasn't at Chris Paul's stature when he joined. So, you know, we've all kind of litigated that before, but it's interesting because it's this addition to something that was already growing. And that's, I mean, to me, that's one of the more fun and interesting sort of things in sports, when you kind of combine those two and just the sort of science experiment that ensues. But I'm curious for you, like, how are you going into 2021? Like, are you letting yourself get carried away and just like, I'm gonna, cause your podcast co-host likes to make extravagant predictions on our website. And I am all power to him. I am not the type of fan who does any of that stuff, because it feels like it's serving you a letdown if it doesn't happen. But where are you? Like, are you letting yourself get carried away? Are you trying to temper expectations? Are you just along for the ride? How would you kind of describe your state of mind as a Suns fan heading into the new year?
I like to look at myself as a realist. You know, I'm pessimistically optimistic, which is, you know, probably a cop out of an answer, but that's the best way to approach this. I mean, there's obvious excitement around this team. You know, having Chris Paul join the Suns, he's a guy who's been the enemy of the Suns for his entire 14-year career. He's lived in the Western Conference. We've played against him, and all of a sudden you're rooting for him and you're tentative at first, but obviously, you know, you go all in with that decision, and then you see what else James Jones has done to fortify this roster, and you can't help but get excited. And hosting a podcast, I'm excited after every win because we go live right after the games, and you can't help but just feed off those emotions. But you have to be a realist when it comes to looking at this. It's a long season. Injuries not only can happen, they will happen. The depth of this team is what's going to have to carry this team towards the playoffs. You know, granted, you know, God willing, we finally get there again, back to the promised land. And then you're also trying to have a team that's navigating COVID and all these different external factors. So as much as I love Matthew's optimism, and it's good to have a co-host who is so optimistic because it does get you excited, I tend to find myself more of a pessimistic fan who tries to be optimistic, but I just, you know, I think realism is the best place to live. We haven't done anything until we've done it. And you have to not live in the world of extremes and understand that this team has a long way to go and nothing is earned, and there's everything to be gained.
Yeah, not unlike the perspective that I think Monty Williams tries to have, right? I mean, he's
very true. That's why he's such a great coach.
Exactly. I completely agree there. And, you know, it's like he, to me, has been battling that ever since, you know, what, game 3 of the bubble or so, where it's like, you know, because of the nature of the bubble, that everyone was watching those games and they were so focused on the Suns because, you know, of the perception that they didn't earn their way there, all that stuff. Like, he's been battling against high expectations, I think, every step of the way for the past few months, and the addition of Paul even adds to that. So, yeah, maybe it's interesting to kind of think of fans sort of sharing that perspective of just, you know, and there's also something to be said, I think, you know, for letting yourself enjoy each step. Because if you jump all the way to, you know, how do we stack up against the Lakers, then you're skipping all the 72 plus games that you're going to have fun watching along the way, right? So I think that's I think that's a good perspective to have. The last thing I wanted to ask you before we close out here is, I talked about it with Espo. To me, you know, you said you're a Dodgers fan. To me, you know, it was a little bit of fun to watch the Dodgers and the Lakers both win titles that I think I tweeted, we can all pretend in 10 years don't count. Right now they're fresh and we can all, you know, celebrate, have some fun, whatever. But, you know, like by 2030, we're all going to be saying that those titles are fake and they didn't actually happen. But with that said, obviously I'm kidding. It was, I'm a big Clayton Kershaw guy. So that was,
don't worry. I've heard everything and, you know, everyone can think what they want. I don't care. You know, I've got a hat that has a World Series, patch on the side and it's not going anywhere. So
yeah. Well, what I wanted to ask is to actually ask a question here is, what was that like? Like you kind of just said part of it, but like going through that season and celebrating it, having fun, getting to see those guys accomplish what they did after so many years of not doing it. How did it feel different, and did it feel any less fulfilling as a fan when you saw it all kind of come to fruition?
Not at all. I mean, granted, it was the strangest journey to get there, having a team that was playing in empty stadiums and not having the ability to go see them when they come to town and not experience it like you normally would. Yeah, that was definitely strange. But when the playoffs began, it was every night living and dying with every pitch, like I always do, just like watching the Cardinals, living and dying with every down, just like watching the Suns, living and dying with every possession. As a fan of sport, and somebody who is you know, loyal to a team, I don't jump ship. You know, I'm a Dodgers fan because I grew up there. I'm a Suns fan because I was born here and I'm from here. I'm a Cardinals fan for the same reason. I live and die with those teams. And to finally reach the pinnacle is something that I haven't felt and you got to realize the Dodgers haven't won the World Series since 1988. I was six. Notre Dame is my college football team because we're Irish Catholic and we grew up with that team. They haven't won a national championship since 1988 when I was six. So I didn't know how to react. And it was just pure and utter elation, relief. I think it's more of relief. I still on my phone have a tweet that I was going to put out when the Dodgers were down to the Atlanta Braves. And it looked like they were about to lose in game. I think it was five or six about the disappointment that, you know, the only other team to be this successful and go on so many runs of winning division titles was the Atlanta Braves. And they got a World Series out of it. And right before I sent that out, a play happened at the plate and they ended up coming back and winning that series. And, you know, I will always look at that tweet to remind me, it's like, it ain't over till it's over. And there's always hope. And, you know, winning it with the Dodgers is fun. If the Suns could win it, that I don't know what I would do. I would lose my mind. I love basketball more than anything. So, I mean, it makes it that much more sweet once we finally get there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you know, while it's unique, and especially with baseball, the fact that the season was so bizarre by the time it finally happened, and it was a heck of a World Series. So that made it a little bit more fun. I'm not even a big baseball guy, and even I got into the playoffs this year because it was just good baseball. But
yeah,
you know, it makes it. I think, you know, for any fan base that gets to celebrate a title during this, you know, pandemic situation, while they won't necessarily be at the games or enjoying them in the same way, like it's probably going to stick in your mind, you know, more so maybe even than it would otherwise because of how kind of desperately we've all just ravaged through sports this year when they've been there for us. So I can imagine that Suns fans will have a similar experience. And we all hope that, you know, even as a lowly reporter like myself, I, you know, it's been weird watching these games without people screaming. Like,
oh yeah, you know, it's gotta be insane for you.
It is. It's been really weird. And it's like, I watched, you know, Dragan Bender and Marquise Chriss fumble their way through 100 games covering this team. And, you know, even the mild hum of what you might want to pretend like is a cheer was better than the bizarre situation in that building right now. So, yeah, hopefully by the time, you know, that the Suns are making that playoff push, we'll be able to consume it together a little bit more naturally. But thank you for coming on, John, and hopefully we can do this again. You are as close to a one-to-one as I've ever had on this show in terms of somebody who does a podcast about as frequently as I do. So You get it, but thanks for coming on.
No, absolutely, Brent. I really appreciate it. Yeah, we pump them out all the time at the Suns jam session. We just, Matthew and I, we both absolutely love the Suns and we love doing it. So kudos to you on taking the Locked On Suns podcast network and doing it every day. I listen to it every day, man. Keep up the great work.
Oh, hey, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, check out John and Matthew over at Jam Session. You can read both of us at Bright Side of the Sun. And congrats to you on the wedding. I don't know if that's something I can say here, but that's awesome. As somebody who has been dealing with an engagement and all of that this year as well, I'm happy for you and that you found a way to make it happen this year.
Oh no, I appreciate it. You know what? 2020's been such a cluster. We figured, why not make this the year that we decided to finally tie the knot? And you know, we both come from big Catholic families and we had to tell a lot of people no, and it actually is going to work out financially because of that. So, you know, I appreciate that. You know, it was a nice little ceremony and, you know, she likes it. So I guess she put a ring on it.
There you go. There you go. Awesome. Well, a perfect way to go out. We will not have a show on New Year's Day. So happy New Year to everybody. Happy New Year to all the Suns fans out there that are navigating this just like John and Espo. I hope you enjoyed the show today, and we will be back Monday with the special guest that I announced to start the show off. So check that out, and I could not be more excited for that, and more Suns games to come. This is going to be a fun year, guys. Have a good weekend, and I will talk to you Monday.